Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to another episode of Risen Motherhood. Emily and Laura here. Very excited to welcome you guys to our second Ask Us Anything show.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting to kind of have another stab at this from last spring.
So really quick, before we jump into a lot of questions, we wanted to share a couple of really exciting announcements. Some of you guys, if you follow us on social media, may have noticed a while back that we posted a job opening with Risen Motherhood for a community manager position. And we were just completely overwhelmed by just a ton of amazing applications. We wanted to be friends with all of you. And we're totally humbled at how many gifted women there are out there. But God did provide somebody for that position. So we are excited to welcome Caitlin Simmons to the team. And so she has just some awesome skills that you guys will be seeing. If you haven't already noticed that we've upped our game,
it is all Caitlin, you guys. She's helping us with things like, well, A, just being organized and all the behind the scenes stuff so that Emily and I are a little bit more freed up to do shows and things like that. And then she's also working on some branding stuff and just being more consistent all around. I don't know. I feel like, what was life without Caitlin? I don't even know. She's so great. She can never leave us. So, and then we also had another really fun addition, Autumn Kern. She came onto the team around the same time as Caitlin, and she is helping us doing some editing for the blog. As you guys probably heard, we are adding some guest contributions to our blog. So she is going to help us coordinate a lot of those things. She's also a really gifted writer, and she has a really good mind for solid theology. So we're excited because I think she's going to be doing some additional posts and some of these wish list projects that Emily and I have. She's going to be helping us out to be able to execute those things. So pretty crazy. Risen Motherhood is a team of five now, if you include our third sister-in-law, Becca, who is still working very hard on a lot of things on the financial side of things and some other special projects that we have sort of coming down the pipe. So isn't that, I don't know. It's pretty crazy, huh, Em?
It is. It's so crazy. And you also might have seen, if you were perusing our show notes, that there are some kind of experimental discussion questions there. We've heard from some of you guys that you discuss the podcast, maybe with friends from church or in your community. And so anyways, this fall, we are going to be kind of testing those out a little bit. And so definitely if you see them and you use them and you have some feedback for us, let us know how those are going so we can figure out what that might look like in the future.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the show. We polled you guys on Instagram and Facebook, and we're just overwhelmed with how many questions came in, which we love. We love how interactive all of you guys are. We love that you guys feel even some ownership towards Risen Motherhood and that you really value just contributing to the conversation. A lot of your questions we did answer in our last Ask Us Anything, and we tried to kind of respond to some of you as we could, but we know we didn't reach everyone. So maybe check that show if you feel like your question was not answered here. And we kind of like to do this show just because we feel like we get a lot of the same questions pretty frequently. So hopefully by answering them in somewhere that it's...
We can reference it later as some of these questions keep coming up.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we also like it because I know we don't always share like tons of personal anecdotes on the show just because of time. And so hopefully it is a fun way for you guys to get to know us a little bit better and just get some context from even what's going on in the background. And Laura and I's lives as you are listening to us respond to some of these other topics that we cover.
Right. And many of you guys asked about topics like birth control, pornography, sexual intimacy, a lot of some of these more hard topics or heavier topics. And for this show, we are tabling those topics mainly because they deserve shows in and of themselves. And at this point, we're really just not sure how to speak to those things in a public way that protects our family, portrays Christian freedom, and doesn't distract from sort of the heartbeat of our show. And so as we're able to, we will try to address some of those questions. We know there are other people out there that are tackling those things. Or, of course, what we really always recommend, getting with women in your church, getting in the local church, talking with them about your unique situation is always the best bet, rather than, you know, hearing it from an online source. They're able to really give you that biblical truth and help guide you forward. So we just wanted to say that we hear those things. We know those are very hard things, but we want to encourage you to try to talk with women in person so that you can really get some gospel-centered advice.
All right. So yeah, this is going to be pretty lighthearted. Laura and I are just going to be bouncing questions back and forth to each other. And so for those of you who have requested longer shows, here it comes.
Oh man, we're going to be exhausted by the end of this. Okay. So Emily, what are you currently reading?
All right. I'm going to start from the thing I'm closest to being finished with to the thing I just started. How about that?
Sounds good.
I'm almost done listening to the audio version of Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, which is kind of a memoir, not something I typically venture into, but it's been a very interesting listen. And then I'm also still in the middle of Good and Angry by David Pallison, which I started last February. But it's a very deep book, and so it's one that I have to like digest one chapter at a time here and there. I'll finish it maybe by the end of the year. We'll see. And then I am in the last book of the Wingfeather Saga. And what I've really been loving and consuming the most is The Imperfect Disciple by Jared Wilson. So that's,
I know, that's on my list.
My new nonfiction Christian read that... It's, I think the tagline is something like grace for people who can't get their act together. So I saw
like
that
me.
And was kind of like, hey, that's me. So anyways, what are you reading right now, Laura?
Yeah, well, I usually read like 6 to 8 books at a time. I know that sounds crazy, but I keep them all over my house. And so prior to having my youngest daughter, Eden, I was reading a lot of books and didn't finish any of them. I mean, I had her and just stopped reading, stopped everything besides, you know, caring for my daughter. And so I picked up a couple new books about, 3-4 weeks ago when I started feeling like I'm getting my new baby sea legs under me. So I'm reading Ordinary by Michael Horton, which is really good if you feel like you're just like an ordinary, normal person that's not doing something crazy radical for the faith. I highly recommend it. And then I'm reading Divided by Faith by Michael Emerson and Christian Smith, which is about racial reconciliation and the church. Very good. And then this fall, my church is doing the Carrie Fulmar study on Ephesians. So I'm also reading Gloria Fuhrman's Alive in Him as kind of a companion book. It goes along with it, and just really slowly reading it as I work through the book of Ephesians. So
nice. All right. So another question that we get a lot kind of going along with that is, what is your ratio of Bible reading to spiritual book reading, and how do you find time for both?
As I mentioned, I read a lot of books at one time, and I do keep them all over. Like, one's in my diaper bag, like 4 are by my nightstand, a couple are downstairs, so one's in the car. They're all over the place, and I do just squeeze reading in where I can. As far as like ratio of Bible reading to spiritual book reading, in terms of sheer word count, I definitely read more nonfiction, but that's also because I'm typically trying to deeper study the Bible word by word or paragraph by paragraph, chapter by chapter. Although I do try to take time to read large chunks of the Bible. And so when I do that, I don't know, the balance gets shifted, but I wouldn't say like I have a real like, oh, it's 60% and 40% or it needs to be that. I think there's different seasons for different time. And I think it's just a matter of, are you getting in God's word or are you only reading nonfiction? You know, and you need to be getting in God's word. So just make that happen. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you there. I feel like I don't see them as like the same thing, or they're not in competition with each other at all. Like, my mental goal is that, you know, 4 mornings a week, like on weekdays, I would be in the word consistently, like doing a deeper time of study, even if that's, you know, 15, 20 minutes of sitting down and being in the word. And then like nonfiction is something that I find myself reading in spurts, because usually at the end of the day, I'm so tired. If I were to read a couple pages of a book, I would just fall right asleep and I can't digest it. So I often find myself reading like on trips or like over the holidays, or if I get a little bit of time at a coffee shop or I'm taking a bath, and that's kind of how I get through books these days. I think one thing I love about nonfiction, that kind of Christian writing that can kind of be a companion, is oftentimes I think it helps me just process the biblical truth that I'm learning in sometimes a new and fresh way, and can help me like apply it differently to my life. So I do feel like it's a pretty important part of maybe meditating or digesting scripture.
Yep. Okay, Emmy, will you share your testimony?
Woo! We're just going to jump right in. I love it. This is fun. I can't believe we've never shared this on the show before. So I grew up in a Christian home. Both my parents are believers. We went to church a lot. I cannot ever remember a time when I didn't believe in God or think that the Bible is true. However, I was just not following after the Lord when I was younger. I think that if you were to look into my life, and I was even to articulate what is the deepest desire of my heart, the deepest desire of my heart was really to find comfort in worldly things, to feel loved and accepted in the ways of the world. And so that is kind of what I pursued. So although I was kind of churchy on the outside, on the inside, I was really just trying to fit into the world around me. So you can extrapolate that. Obviously, there's a ton of details. But around the age of 20, I started to realize that I guess I just wasn't able to find fulfillment in some of those worldly things, like relationships and achievement and just doing everything right on the outside. And God was just very gracious to bring me to a point where I was at the end of myself. And I can very vividly remember sitting in my car after a broken relationship I had with someone, just crying out to God for help. And it was probably the first time I remember crying out and knowing like I could not get myself together. I couldn't get my act together. And I needed the grace of God to help me do that. And so I think that was kind of a turning point moment for me. I don't ever remember, quote unquote, like going back after that. And I had a passion for reading the word. I got involved in a local church. It was just, I don't know, it was kind of like one of those, my whole life changed stories. What I found pleasure in, who I was spending my time with, all of those things changed. And so from there, it was really the first couple of years was really just healing from a lot of the baggage and the trail of destruction in my life from different sins I was involved in. And then there was a couple of years of just bursting and growth of my understanding of scripture. And then kind of from there, it's just been slower, you know, growth in theology, growth in understanding the gospel, applying that to my life. And now I think I'm going on 11 plus years of woo-hoo, faithfully walking with the Lord, although I'm still a big sinner.
Isn't it funny how we just never arrive?
All right. So there was my testimony in like 2.5 minutes.
Good job. I'm impressed. That was quick.
All right. Go for it, Laura.
Okay, so I am blessed to never know a day without Christ. I think often, sometimes these can be coined the boring testimony, but I have to remind myself that it is never a boring testimony when you remember just the incredible miracle for God to take a dead heart and make it alive again. And so that is never, ever boring. And I have taken great comfort in that, because I think at times I've thought, oh, I want one of those really cool conversion stories, or I want, you know, something even more like Emily's to show how God really just took me out of sin and then brought me to new life. And it's like, no, that's exactly what he did. And it's a real mercy to never know a day that you haven't loved the Lord. I came from a family who taught me about Christ from the beginning. We moved around a lot when we were little, and that also meant we moved through a lot of churches, but we finally settled in central Iowa, and we found a really, really wonderful church that was really integral to my understanding of my faith and really worked with helping us to apply it to our everyday lives. I think they were really, really good at that. And in many ways, I was sort of groomed as a Christian from a pretty young age. I was definitely a good moral kid. I went to church multiple days a week. My main friend group was found through the youth group. But particularly in high school, I mean, there were the natural pressures and there were some more difficult trials that just happened in my life at that time, where I think my faith was tested. And I can say at that point was really where it stopped being my parents' faith. It stopped being kind of something that I just did because it was the only thing I'd ever known, and it really became my own. Then I went on to college, and that was when I started growing in my love for theology and understanding why it is important to know why you believe what you believe. And so I took some theology classes at my local church in college, kind of began doing some more leadership work in small groups and Bible studies. And those things just really deepened my faith to a point where I felt like I was able to just pour into other women and just to invest well. And there are definitely things that happened in there and still things that are happening now that are hard and difficult and have deepened my faith. But I've been really grateful for just a solid foundation, really since I was born.
Yeah. So hopefully that gives some context and background. I feel like we have a little bit of different testimonies, although God has forged us together in relationship, which is exciting. Moves us on to our next question so well.
Yes, I was going to say, that ties well to our next question. So someone asked, as sister-in-laws, how did your friendship develop? Did it come naturally? And how much did you work for it in the beginning?
So, Laura, I don't know if you remember this as vividly.
I don't remember first meeting you. Is that terrible?
Okay, I can remember every detail. I remember what you were wearing when you came down the stairs at your parents' house and I walked in. Oh my goodness. So it was October of 2008. I'm taking everybody back there right now.
I literally don't remember this. This is terrible.
Well, it was probably like a bigger deal to me. So Laura's brother, Brad, had never had a girlfriend before and they were very close growing up and very close friends in college. And so I knew like I had to pass Laura in order to like keep going. And, so I felt like there was a lot of like, oh, I want Laura to like me. I want us to get along. And I was also very self-conscious because I was like a pretty new believer at that time. And my husband was just surrounded by a community of very mature believers. And it was just like a really strong Christian community. And so I just felt kind of like, oh no, like I don't know the lingo. Like I'm just kind of felt like a misfit a little bit. And I remember sleeping in a twin bed in Laura's apartment and staying up and talking with you at night a little bit for the very first time.
I remember that.
Okay, good. And so it's funny. That's what I remember about the beginning of our relationship. But I think we've always gotten along and like had good discussions and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it hasn't been without some bumps, but especially in the beginning, I don't know, I can't believe how easily I accepted you. Like, looking back, you were dating my brother, who was like one of my best friends, and I immediately liked you. I mean, we immediately hit it off, I think, and I was just really excited because both my brothers were kind of dating and bringing some girls around, and I was just excited for sisters, I think, or the concept of future sisters, and so, but if we want to get real, I think a lot of people have asked us, you know, how do you guys have such a good relationship or how are you all able to work together? Because, you know, now Becca is with us as well. Mm-hmm. And I am always just like, by the grace and mercy of God, like there are things that we've done, I think, through just learning what true friendship looks like, through communicating really well, to being open to seeking forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Like Emily and I have definitely had to say we're sorry to each other.
Yeah.
And I don't do that with all my friends, or I maybe don't get to that point. But one thing that I have always really appreciated about the way that I was brought up, and then the way I know Emily and Becca also have kind of taken in this concept as well. But like family, like you fight for family and you strive for those relationships. And so family comes first, meaning over risen motherhood, over whatever petty argument we have, over whatever thing we're going to do, Emily and I always really strive to say we value each other more than any of these things. And so what can we do to preserve our relationship? Mm-hmm. And to be very honest, and I will say this candidly, like we have said, we are willing to say no to risen motherhood if it comes between Emily and I. Mm-hmm. And God has been merciful that that has not needed to happen yet, but that's how committed we are to one another and preserving that family relationship.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things I really value about our relationship is Laura and I are very different, and we have like the same heartbeat in theology. We have the same heartbeat in life and in motherhood and all of that, but our personalities are different. And so it has just been a mercy and a gift in my life to have Laura, who I think helps refine me and push me in areas where I am weak and quick to maybe just turn towards what's more comfortable for me. And so I think like whenever a relationship gets to the level where like you can both like sin and still love each other and like work through that and be like, this isn't like a perfect person or a perfect relationship, but yeah, I love it. And God's using it in my life and it's so valuable to me. It's just so beautiful. It's kind of like when you get to that point in marriage where you realize like your husband is no, really, like, he's a sinner. And yet you're like, but I love him and I'm on his team and he, you yeah. know, he and I are partners together in this. It's mm-hmm. just, it's cool to get to that level in a friendship. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, we are always on each other's team. And that's even when we're disagreeing and it can be hard to see. But when we step back for like 2 hot seconds, we want to sit on the same side of the table. Like it's sort, it does sound like a marriage relationship, Emily, but I think that's what makes it work is when you covenant with another person, you say, I'm sticking by your side and yeah. we are together. And so just know that Risen Motherhood isn't without its bumps, that our relationship is imperfect mm-hmm. and there have been really hard days, but I guess that's what makes it work is mm-hmm. just the grace and mercy of God and two people who are willing to say, I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me?
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah. So. There can never be too much forgiving in any relationship.
Mm, yes. Okay, so some more behind the scenes about Risen Motherhood. We had a lot of questions about this. So how do you try to balance ministry, work life, so Risen Motherhood with everything else? Mm-hmm. And how many hours or days are you working on the ministry and how do you make the most of your time?
All right.
That was kind of a long question.
Yeah. And so Laura and I think we'll answer this separate because it looks differently for each of us. Mm-hmm. We have different capacities, different family lives, different things that we enjoy doing as part of Risen Motherhood and different things that are harder for us each to do. And so we have really, like Laura said, by the grace of God over the last over 2 years now, Laura, is that right?
A year and a half only.
Oh, okay.
A year and eight. Worked to
try to understand what each person needs in order to be able to do Risen Motherhood and how we can help one another and accommodate that. And so the way it kind of looks for me is I tried to do Risen Motherhood in chunks of time in terms of hard time. And so each day I do kind of all the normal things for my family, whether that's, hey, keeping the house clean, getting the laundry done, making sure everybody's eating, you know, all of those things. And then I assume like when my pocket of time comes up during the day, I will sit down and work on whatever content creation or email or just prepping for a show or writing, et cetera, for Risen Motherhood. And so my hard time, I don't know, probably averages anywhere from like 2 to 5 hours a week. It just depends. Like I feel like sometimes there's like no real like hard time and others weeks there's a lot. And so, and then there's kind of like this soft hours that are hard to quantify for Risen Motherhood. Like, well, if I do an Instagram story, does that count? If I check Instagram, you know, right. like if Laura and I are having a conversation about strategy, like I kind of do that while I'm cleaning, does that count? So I think that's where it can be kind of be murky and it's difficult to explain like how it kind of fits into life. But definitely it's something that I've had to push harder than I feel comfortable with sometimes. And then there's other times where I've had to pull back and put boundaries where it's like creeping in too far. So I think it's always just a balance and praying and checking in with my husband and all of those good things.
Yeah. As Emily mentioned, like we've really figured out different roles. And so at one point though, I was probably spending something like 30 hours a week on Risen Motherhood, sort of doing more of the main behind the scenes running of it. And it was too much time. Mm-hmm. It was all that I did. I did it anytime I had a chance, even my kids were present or not. And it really probably wasn't the most healthy, especially because I still desire to be generally a stay-at-home mom. So through just the encouragement of Emily and Becca, who that is one thing that I think Emily's really, really good at is saying, how can you love your family best in this season? And what boundaries or what things do you need to set into place so that you can do that? I probably would not have done this on my own, but I am so glad that they encouraged me to do so with Becca coming on. And then as we mentioned, we have Caitlin and Autumn, and I really don't have to do nearly as much. It's really freed me up, even to a point where I'm like, okay, like what do I do now? And I do tend to be sort of a type A go-getter type person. So I am now learning what a new routine looks like. I can't really speak to it quite yet because we're sort of in transition mode, but I have 4 hours of childcare a week. I mean, my youngest is still with me, but I do try to do bigger projects like the writing projects or different higher level thinking things during that time. And then I would say I'm an early riser. And so I do a lot of things before the kids get up now that, again, we're getting back into routine. But it sort of looked all over the place. And now that we're trying to get into a more healthy routine, and I'm really, really grateful for that. I needed it more than I knew.
Yes. So there's obviously lots of details of the ins and outs, but another behind the scenes questions that we were asked is, do you live close to each other? How do you record together? Do you do a bunch of podcasts at once or separately? And how do you choose your topics? So maybe we just talk through the logistics really quick here, Laura.
Yeah. So we do not live close to each other. We're 5 hours away. I'm in Chicago and Emily is in central Iowa. We both record kind of locally into our computers while we use Skype. Like right now I'm looking at Emily on Skype. And then I edit the shows into GarageBand, but we both listen to the final show for clarity and for content. So we do try to record a couple shows at once. That's also a new thing. We used to record really early in the morning. So if you've been a long time follower, you might've seen us on stories. We'd post at like 6 a.m. and we were both...
I can't believe we did that, Laura.
I can't either. I don't know what got into us. But now we are trying to use childcare time in order to record because we're a little peppier. We're a little more with it. And I think we both just feel like it's just not as hard. It was
it's a little bit hard. Efficient. Yes. Yeah. So we are theoretically like a couple of afternoons a month setting aside that time during nap time or school time or morning time, whatever, and just trying to make the most of it. And so the topics that we choose are, I feel like it's a combination. First of all, it's often things that God is laying on our hearts to talk about. And it's things that we're learning in our own journey of motherhood and what he's teaching us about gospel application in our own lives. And then honestly, like a lot of it's frequently asked questions from listeners and kind of that coupled with, okay, we feel like God is leading us to talk about this topic now. And then sometimes our topics are just like vision or direction motivated. And by that, I mean, like we may look at the year and say, hey, this is something like we think that should be understood or talked about sometime in the next year. And so we will try to put that in our editorial calendar or add in some type of perspective or get a different interview on a topic. And so that's kind of how they come together.
Yeah. And we do have an frequently asked questions page on our website, which particularly for the logistics, if, you know, we heard from some of you, you want to start a community like this or you want to start a podcast. If you want like kind of some of our links, we're happy to share. There is an answer in there that you can look at and see more nitty gritty to this, I suppose. So another kind of layered on question someone asked is, do you get paid for Risen Motherhood? We love having the free access to all the resources on the website, but I'm just wondering if you make anything.
We don't make anything. We don't make anything right now. It's definitely been an interesting journey. So when we first started out, honestly, this has just been a passion project for Laura and I. This is an area where we feel like God's just gifted us and given us a calling for, and it's something we've just done in our spare time. Podcasting is not free, so we did start out paying the expenses out of pocket. And yeah, that's kind of still where we're at. But maybe Laura, you can speak to what the plan is as we continue to grow.
Well, the plan is always changing, but we are.
That's why I popped that question over to you
because neither of us know the answer. No. It has been a passion project for Emma and I. And as the podcast has grown, like when it started, it wasn't super expensive, but as it grows and we have more listeners, we have more resources, we have more things that are necessary, the expenses just have grown with it. And so we have been really grateful because we've had donors just pop up. God has really provided where we haven't had to seek anything and we have had some donors.
And we've had some incredible stories with that where we've literally had like an expense or some new thing that we're like, oh, we really want to add this in, but oh, we really aren't sure if we want to, you know, have that expense yet. And then like a check will show up in the mail. And it's just like floors us. It's amazing.
For the exact cost of whatever that expense was.
For the exact cost.
Like we are modern day George Mueller's, you guys. It was it's been pretty amazing. But we are looking ahead to, okay, how can we stabilize? Like the expenses are getting enough that maybe it is a little bit more difficult for Emily and I to cover. Mm-hmm. So there may be some things that you're going to see this fall. We are fairly committed to not wanting to do ads. Not that ads are bad, but for us, they add a little bit more work and complexity. And also, we feel like with a really short show that we have, 20 minutes, it's a pretty precious to give up even 1 minute of an ad. And so we are looking into different things. There'll probably be more information for you guys on that. But yeah, we're not really sure. We want to steward this platform really well, and we are just trusting God to kind of lead us to each step and how we need to move forward and how we can care for our family as well, but also be able to just continue to engage with you guys and just encourage other moms on to just a higher level of motherhood. So
yes,
we'll see.
We're always we are always encouraged. God provides. Like, I feel like whenever we get to a point with Risen Motherhood where we're both like, we don't know how we're going to keep doing this, like either because of time or finances or whatever, God has just been so gracious to provide like a solution that we would not have thought of, or a resource that we didn't previously have available, or a person or a helper. And so just praise the Lord. He's been very good to us.
Yes. Okay, so moving on to some motherhood stuff. What things did you get, or do you get, hung up on pertaining to little ones? Or what things did you obsess over and try to control? And how did you give those things to God?
Ooh, well, currently, if you want to know what I am hung up on, kind of a piddly thing, I am hung up on my kids not climbing on our upstairs couches right now. And not because I care about the couch necessarily, but because I want like one area of our home that I'm like, we don't climb on this part of the home. We sit like nice little civilized people with our bottoms on the cushion. And there is another area where you can climb. So, and it's funny, as I look back, there's just a ton of things. My husband and I have gone through a long season. Like, we are pretty rigid about 7 p.m. bedtime at our house, and pretty much have always been. And honestly, that has some really good things about it. And it has some things that are hard at times, and some things that it's kind of like, hey, we should be more flexible with that. Another thing right now, I feel like touching the baby's hands and face, that's something I can be kind of crazy about.
Yes.
Like little kids, if like a little kid comes up and is like, oh, baby, and they like rub their snot, like inside, I am like,
get away.
But
outside, you're like, oh, sweet little thing.
I'm like, oh, let me just hide my baby. Let go away. So I think that there's always that part of me that is like, okay, you know what? Like, we live life in the world. Like, these are boogers. This isn't, you know, a severe illness. And I can trust the Lord. And even if something happens, I'm going to trust him with her life and all of that. And so it's just always that rehearsing the truth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's anything else right now. I am a little bit also obsessed with our three-year-olds are going through this three-year-old plural of twins are really into whining right now. And I am very much into correcting them like the whole day. So I feel like that is their main area of training right now is, no, you need to stop and say that to mommy in a kind voice. Mm-hmm. You need to try again. You know? So I don't know. Sometimes it's good to be, it's a good stubbornness, but it's also something that I have to remember, like, this is obviously a heart change. This isn't something that just saying it over and over and over again is going to make the change. You need to be praying for them in this. And, trusting that God is working in their hearts and working through my parenting. I don't know, Laura, what are all the things you're...
Oh, man. Well, I can identify with many of yours. I mean, I'm just like, man, kids, how hard is it to ask kindly? Like, come on. You know, you just kind of... The sin, we repeat our sins all the time, so I just have to remind myself that. But it does kind of seem like, when will that set in, please? So, I don't know. I think, like, right now, not a lot of things are sending me into a true tizzy, and that doesn't mean that I'm not uptight at times, but I think in the past I really was, especially with my firstborn. I just remember being really, really rigid about sleep schedules and what kind of food they were served, or being green and eco. And like, none of those things are wrong, but I think I was just like, I would have just very, very visceral reactions to if things got off track or if I wasn't kind of respected in some of those rules or the way that I wanted to raise my firstborn, like in the physical aspects of raising him. And I think part of that is sort of a natural learning process that every mom goes through. You know, we have to kind of sift through what matters, what doesn't matter. And we feel like, especially as first-time moms, like that a lot more things matter than when you have subsequent children. I think you just have to start picking and choosing a little bit more.
Yeah. You can't control every detail anymore. And then you're like, uh-oh.
Exactly.
This really isn't all under my care and control all the time.
Exactly. And so I think it's really, even now, looking at, I know Emily and I have shared this on the show so many times, so this won't be new to you, but asking, okay, what am I worshiping right now? Am I super bent out of shape because grandma held the baby for a nap, or because someone just gave them sugar before dinner, dad just, you know, said, let's go out for ice cream or something like that right before dinner, or whatever that may be. I think, like, I continually, even today, have to ask myself, does my response match the offense? And just kind of going back to that and being honest about how I'm really feeling and checking my heart and where it's at, because I think that just applies to motherhood no matter where you're at. But when we can get uptight about things that aren't really worth getting uptight over.
Well, that right there was great advice, Laura, which leads us to the next question. What is the best spiritual and most practical advice you've received during your time as a mom? Okay, so practical right off the bat. I had a light bulb moment when a mom sat down with me and we were talking about discipline, and I was prepared for her to share all of her tips and tricks with me. And she spent a lot of time telling me about training, which is teaching my children in advance what I want them to do and preparing them and setting expectations. And honestly, that's my number one most helpful thing I need to do when it comes to helping my children do what I've asked. And it's usually the thing I forget the most. And then I think the best spiritual advice, okay, this is like not an exciting answer, but just to stay in the word. And if I'm not growing in my relationship with God and I am not just feasting on true food that's going to fill me up, I'm going to have nothing to pour out to my family. And again, that's something that is easy to lay by the wayside, but it just, I keep coming back to it over and over again.
Yeah. As far as practical, I think for me, I want to use Emily's because that truly is mine as well. But if I have to give something else, this probably isn't the best thing that I received, but one of the things that kind of like sucker punched me in the gut was when someone, when I started counting to three and I was kind of disciplining in front of this person, they just said to me, "Oh, counting to three only teaches them to obey on three." And I was like, "Oh, that's a really good point." So I don't know if that's like necessarily the best advice that I've gotten, but I just thought it was a really good point. And then something as far as spiritual, I don't know, something else that helped me is my mom once told me when I was trying to make some decisions about some stuff, she said, "What will matter for eternity? Just do that." And I was like, yeah, you know, that's actually a really good point. That's really helpful to like evaluate. So will it matter if my kids eat a cookie for eternity? Probably not. But if I don't help them shape a grateful heart or help them with their heart attitudes, that will matter for eternity. So it's helped me kind of keep my focus, actually going back to that question we just answered about what matters in motherhood and where to sort of lay down our battles and draw our lines. That's a good thermostat, right?
Yeah, thermostat.
I'm trying to say it's a good...
That's right.
Okay, measuring stick, whatever. Whatever, it's a good measuring stick.
There you go.
Move on. Okay, so somebody else asked, "How do you do more than just survive with multiple kiddos? There are so many needs all day. I feel like all I'm doing is nursing or trying to get the baby to sleep." Yeah.
Well, can I just say we're right there with you?
That's pretty accurate though, isn't it?
Like, yeah, but I think one thing I have learned, and it's taken me, I think for the last 3.5 years, I felt like we were in survival mode ever since we had twins enter the picture. But even before that too, it's just that is like where my life is happening. Like I keep thinking I'm going to get out of this stage. We're going to move on to something else. But honestly, like the way that we're interacting with our kids when we're feeding them and helping train them so that they can sleep well and, you know, filling up their tummies with good things and helping intervene and showing them how to clean up their toys when they've spilled them everywhere and helping get them from point A to point B. It's just like, that is life. That is where like this good stuff is happening. That's where the training ground is happening. That's where the gospel is being passed on. And so I'm learning to like, I want to say embrace survival mode, but see it as like not something that I should like put my life on hold until I get out of it.
Another good point to bring in here was Ruth's comment about God not letting us dominate every area of our lives. And so just remembering that, kind of as Emily was saying, survival mode is his mercy, showing us that we can't always be in control. We can't always have it all together. So seeing that truth as evidence in your home when you feel like you're in survival mode. And I, as Emily was saying too, I feel like it's just my mode. Like just take out the word survival. I'm like, this is just the MO right now. You know, for the first 5 years of motherhood, it's sort of just one big survival mode.
Yeah. And practically, because I know you're probably wanting a little practical tidbit. I think something that's helped me over the last few years is developing like a really stable home management routine where like we can kind of have our house in order. And for us, that's going to bed with a clean kitchen every night and having a picked up house. It's not perfect every single day, but honestly, that is the first thing that I add back in as soon as I can. And we go through a transition so that that feels like if everything else is chaotic, our house feels kind of under a routine. And then starting to add in one little thing as you can, like, okay, now I'm going to meal plan plan a little bit, or now I'm going to take a little short time away so I can figure out how to organize that closet. It's just doing it in little bite-sized chunks. And then again, not being upset if for one day your baby was sick and all you did was like sit on the couch with them and
yeah,
rock them.
Yep. Speaking of babies to rock, how do you cope with little sleep? Pregnancy, insomnia, newborn stage, temporary illnesses, etc. So we did do a show that sort of talks about transitions and a time with little sleep. So check out episode 60, which we'll link in our show notes. But on top of that, I think at least I know you can, Emily, everybody can identify with this question so much, but my daughter had colic, my second born, and she crushed me. I was getting about 3 to 5 hours of sleep a night, and just not being able to nap during the day. My toddler went on a different schedule. We had just moved. There were a lot of transitions happening in our life. And so it was a very, very difficult season, and one that was actually really painful and really revealed a lot of sin issues in my life. When I don't get sleep, I am totally the worst version of myself. So yes, what I can tell you is during that season, I did cry a lot. I was a total train wreck, and I read my Bible aloud and felt like, I felt nothing. I felt like nothing had meaning, that God wasn't listening to me, that he wasn't hearing me. I prayed so much that he would bring us out of that season more quickly than he did. But I realized that as he progressed me through that season, he just took me to a really sweet season of rest and recuperation. And so I was able to look back on that time. And while I don't have any practical tips for getting through a lot of those things besides, quote, catching sleep where you can, which was something that I wasn't able to do in that season, I think that it really dug a lot of truth into me, so much deeper than a season of a lot of rest would have been able to do. And remembering that it may be a season that is really, really hard and really difficult, but it does have meaning. All suffering has meaning. And I think sleep deprivation is a type of suffering, and suffering always has meaning. God works in that. And so if you are there, I just understand how difficult that is. And I'm sorry I don't have super practical advice, but all I can say is that where you're at, like, God is going to work in that time, and he's probably really, really refining your heart.
Yeah, I'm with you, Laura, of like, if you want to see like the worst version of who I am, catch me when I haven't been sleeping for a period of time. And I know I'm super irritable with my family. I feel short. I feel like I have no self-control with food. And it's just kind of like, whatever. But just on a note of like, let's say like, it's not just like an illness or your baby has colic or something that you have absolutely no, you know, control over, and God is just truly sustaining you. I think one thing is knowing that sleep, it has a direct correlation to how I like treat my family and how I am, you know, just feeling in general, has helped us, I think, prioritize sleep when we have babies in terms of training and some of the different sleep arrangements that we make. And so I think there's complete freedom in the way that each family wants to do that. But that is something we take into consideration when we are going, hey, where should this baby sleep? How should we help train them in that? I think I just know, hey, if we can do what we can, knowing we cannot control everything, to help them sleep well so that we can be rested, I can, and my husband can, really come alongside our kids a lot better during the day. And it's just, I don't know, usually a better situation for our family, but it doesn't always work out perfect like that.
Okay, so how have your marriages weathered the recent health issues of your kids, and what do fights and reconciliation look like?
Ooh, I thought this was a really insightful question.
I did too.
And so if you haven't heard, or you're like, what are they talking about? Go back and listen to our recent episode about questions and evaluations and appointments and when your child does not fit the mold. On there, Laura and I share a little bit about where we have been recently with kiddos who are going through different medical needs, therapy needs, etc. So yeah, I think, Laura, you and I have kind of different journeys in this, but one thing that God has just been really, really gracious to my husband and I think to keep us unified in this season and just lockstep. And that's something I do not take for granted, because my background is a little bit that I have one sibling who has special needs, significant special needs, and my degree is in special education. Most of my work experience has been with people who have special needs. And so by the time my husband and I had gotten married, we'd already had lots of conversations about kind of the special needs community and how that would maybe impact our family someday, not our own children. We had no idea that was going to come into our life as parents, but it wasn't like a brand new thing to us. But I was under no illusions that it was going to be an easy thing when it happened to us as parents. I have seen firsthand in my own parents' marriage and in families who have children with special needs that it absolutely, parents grieve differently. They process differently. They have different ideas about the way treatment should happen sometimes. And so I think that was something I was very fearful of as the situation started to unfold in our family. But my husband and I have prayed and asked people, like every time someone is like, how can we pray for you in this challenge you're facing, over and over again, our number one prayer request is pray that we are unified. Pray that we would stay, our hearts would stay together in this. And so far, he has been so faithful to answer that prayer. And that is something that I'm going to continue to cry out for as the years go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we're pretty new to this journey. My story is very different than Emily's. I really haven't had much experience with others with special needs or any like major differences, really. And so we're still only a couple of months into understanding diagnosis, so it's a bit hard to say, but we are similar to Emily and Brad, and we're really grateful to have them in our lives. It's pretty amazing that, again, God would just put Emily in my life and Brad in Mike's, and just unifying all of us in some senses, mm-hmm. of understanding and being able to comfort one another as we work through the different diagnoses of our children. But one thing I would say is that my husband and I have talked, when we talk about grieving for our daughter, when my father-in-law passed our first year of marriage, it was a really difficult imbalance in the grief levels. So I had, of course, grown close with my father-in-law over the 5 years that I knew him, but it was nothing like what my husband was experiencing having lost his dad. And so at that time, I had no idea really how to comfort my husband, and he could not comfort me. I think we were both very lost as we processed grief differently. It was sort of the first time we'd gone through that. And in many ways, I felt like I needed to hide my grief because I didn't deserve it, because his was so much more. And not to get into what was right or wrong about some of that thinking or what happened during that time, the point is, I think when you have a child that is experiencing any type of health issue, as parents, you're both grieving at the same level. And so we can be allowed whatever amount of grief we need to have, we can have that. And maybe it's different, but there's this element of just knowing, I think for me and my husband, that it's like, we are experiencing the exact same thing. Like, we both 10,000% get each other. And we 10,000% need each other during this time. So I don't know. I think it's been really neat to be unified at that level, having experienced two different types of grief in my marriage, that we are really able to support one another. Even though we do process things different, we both have the same dreams. We both feel like some of the hopes that we had for her have changed, and we are allowed to be sad about that. Like, we just understand each other more than anyone else can, because she's our daughter and no one really loves her as much as we do, besides God, of course. So,
All right. Well, okay. So the next question is about husbands getting leftovers because, you're so tired when he comes home. I think a version of that question was asked many, many times. And so kind of, how do you best balance the needs of your husband and your infant or your child, et cetera, et cetera? We have episode 35 about this. And we also have a show we did on the Dad Tired podcast that talked to this, I think, a little bit.
Yeah. I would say check out our marriage tab on our show notes. There's a whole tab on marriage, and we've done like 5 shows, and all of them will have probably pretty good nuggets of truth. But 35 is probably, I literally think it's called Giving Your Husband More Than the Leftovers, something like that.
Oh, well, so there you go. I think all of our answers are probably there.
Yeah, I think we're going to move past this question. It was asked a lot, so we wanted to address it, but that is one of those that we have done an entire episode on. So we would just encourage you, we'll link this in our show notes and you can check it out.
All right. So another husband question. We would love to hear about how you balance housework with your hubby. Okay. So I think Laura and I also, again, have different, I love that we get to talk on this show because hopefully you're getting to see, like, it looks different for everyone, and that's okay. But I think when I had just one kiddo, it was mostly me doing the vast majority of the housework, kind of inside. My husband went to work and he did a lot of stuff outside the house. And then when we added twins to the family, I feel like everything kind of changed, and it was like, no, all hands on deck. And we have been in that mode ever since then. Our oldest is 5. So we have 5 kids, 5 and under. And my husband, when he comes home from work, it's like, hey, we are all in this together. together. And we have this unspoken rule of like, if you see it and it needs to be done, you do it, you know? And, that's where we're at with housework right now. So during the day, I try to keep the house as picked up as possible. Usually like my husband will do breakfast. I get meals cleaned up, et cetera. I do laundry during the day, prep dinner. And then when my husband comes home after bedtime, we both clean up the kitchen together. We load the dishwasher. We sweep together. We wipe counters. We do all of that stuff. And then when we are done, we crash on the couch and look at each other and go, whew. And sometimes we chat after that. So it's kind of, it's just like become more of a partnership, and there isn't like this clean, you know, I do this, my husband does that. And that's just where we're at right now. And it's totally fine. I think it's just changes season to season. And especially on the weekends, like we both just work at home during, you know, at whatever needs to be done, we do together. It's usually a mountain of laundry on our kitchen island, and we put on a podcast or we put on an audiobook and our kids play and we fold laundry together.
Yeah, I think for me, well, my husband broke his leg in July. It is now the end of September when we are recording this episode, and he is still on crutches, which I just had to laugh when I saw this question because I just thought, well, you know, right now it's kind of all landing on me. That is not by choice. But, you know, when he broke his leg, I was like, your arms aren't broken. Here's a basket of laundry. So he definitely has been helping where he can. But I think that it's a little bit of a weird season for us. But prior to that, like typically I usually do almost all the housework, even things like I will mow the lawn and or shovel the driveway. And my husband does that where he can. But as many of you guys know, he does work pretty long hours. And so we have really worked to, because I have capacity and where I have capacity, I really try to keep the house running because he is really the primary breadwinner in our home and he is working very hard out there. So I do what I can here. That's not to say it's always like that. I mean, he was helping me cook lunch the other day, just sitting on a chair and cutting vegetables. So I feel like, again, we don't have strict rules. And as we have added more children to our life, and especially with our youngest daughter's health needs, with a lot of appointments, things like that, it has also been similar to what Emily said, as all hands on deck. So whatever he can do, he does. And I know that once his leg is better, please pray that it's soon and he can walk in a boot, that he'll be also just contributing a lot more. But yeah, we're sort of in a funny season right now.
Yeah. And I would jump in too and just say, like, it's the same as becoming true for our children too. Like, all hands on deck in this house, and they are now expected to help clean up as well. So it's not just us splitting our duties with our husbands. Yep, I know Laura and I are both intentionally saying, hey kiddos, we need your help in this family too. And you need to pick this up, or you have this chore or that thing that you're responsible for. So it's kind of nice to be getting to that point where it's not just mom and dad. It's the whole family working together to make the house run well.
Very true. Yes. My kids can put away laundry. They put away the colorful dishes out of the dishwasher. So yeah, there's lots of good chores they can do.
Okay. So next question was, do you keep your kids with you on Sunday or send them to nursery? Do you send them to Sunday school? And how do you balance receiving from the Lord and caring for children?
This is a good one. Right now, we actually kind of switched this up over the summer, my husband and I. All three of our children are actually with us for the first half of the worship service. There is Sunday school offered for our kids, but for right now, we're just keeping them in there. Our son had some questions about, you know, what do you guys do in there while I go and play? And we're like, come see. And it just sort of stayed that way, where we kind of wanted to show them what it looks like to see adults worshiping the Lord, seeing their mom and dad, seeing their other kids' parents and friends, just worshiping God and see what it really looks like. So in terms of how that balances of getting things from the Lord, I don't know. I'm sure, Emily, you and I will have the same answer about training our children, sort of back to what Emily had referenced. Just we prep them in the car. We talk about what the expectations are. Our only real expectations are just that they kind of sit quietly or stand quietly with whatever order the service is going in. But they don't have to sing. They don't really have to do anything special. They just have to behave and be quiet during the service. So in reality, typically, I mean, there are days, but typically it's really fun and enjoyable to have them with us and to see them kind of looking around and watching and coming home singing the songs that we're singing, but it's not difficult to have them with us.
Yeah. Yeah. We are similar to you, Laura. We just went through a transition. So our church, at the age of 5, there is no more like nursery or anything you can go to. So our oldest is now in the service with us the whole time. And so, like you said, we just have like some activities, and just right now the baseline is just be quiet and don't disturb anyone. But it is fun. And the goal obviously is like integrating them into the church service. Like that is the goal, that they are in church with you. But other than that, I feel like we're pretty liberal with the church nursery just because of the quantity and ages of our kiddos. And as it is, you know, somebody will end up crying or needing us pretty regularly anyways. So, I mean, we definitely send our twins to the nursery. And we know that their time will come to start training them to be with us. So that's kind of the way we've handled it thus far, but it's kind of nice when your church culture, I think, kind of dictates for you. And that's kind of, we've just taken the lead of our church.
Okay, so this next one is sort of a related question, which we have answered before, but we got it quite a few times. We continue to hear it, so we thought we would address it on air. The question is, how much should I sacrifice my child's own needs in order to be able to attend church or growth group, basically to attend types of things that allow for spiritual growth? So...
yeah.
Emily, do you want to tell them where to find that answer?
So we talked about this on our last Ask Us Anything show. So you can definitely go check that out. We'll link it in the show notes. And we also touched on it a little bit in our show about finding your primary tribe. And so definitely go check those out. But in a short answer, basically, Lauren, I would say that going to church as a family is super important. Being a part of a small group of people, even that meets weekly, is really important. And a Bible study is very worthwhile. And all of those things, you know, once or twice a week, disrupting nap schedules, feeding schedules, the whole nine yards, is probably worthwhile, in our opinion, in order to fill up yourself spiritually and grow as a family.
Yeah. Another one we got a lot is, how do you balance housework versus playing with your kids? So do you play with your children all the time? That was how the question was phrased a couple times to us. And no, the answer is no, we don't. But we have also answered this. Again, it comes into our inbox quite frequently and it popped up here again. So check out the last Ask Us Anything show for our answer on that and how we balance the juggle, because we know it is tough for sure.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to link to in the show notes a resource. So Hannah Anderson and Aaron Straza, if I'm saying that right, did a podcast episode at the very end of the summer about going back to school. And they actually kind of referenced this topic. And I thought they did a really great job of covering it. So that just came to my mind. I'll make sure we link to that. Another question we had was, what resources do you have for training up toddlers or for general discipline? So we always get the question about resources for discipline and training. We have episode 57 about discipline, and you can also check out our resources page on our website or the show notes for that show. We tried to link to a lot of our favorite things, or at least a few things, to help get the conversation started.
And as we mentioned at the very beginning of the show, a lot of the topics we aren't able to cover in full today, and they are great questions, but we chose not to cover them because they really deserve their own shows. So some that we already have slated, we wanted to tell you about because they were asked about so many times. We are definitely going to talk about school.
Yes.
Emily and I are definitely facing that right now. We are dealing with that decision and working through all of the different options. So know that there is a three-part series coming that we're very excited about. We will cover all the major styles of schooling. So that is coming down the pipe. And then also, we have a full-time working mom that's coming on the show as well. That's something that we've sort of been trying to get and end up with these... well, very wonderful entrepreneurs, but they have sort of a more flexible work-life balance. And so we wanted to bring on someone who would really connect with all of you working moms. We hear you. And so we are bringing on a woman who just has a really neat background. We're excited for her to apply the gospel to this topic. So we want you guys to also know that we are working on that topic for sure.
Yes. And kind of along that same vein, we're also frequently asked about working moms versus stay-at-home moms and the whole mommy wars debate. So we thought we would attempt to give kind of an elevator speech to answer that question on this show, even though we hope that over the course of many, many shows, if you've listened to us for a while, you can maybe even predict what our answer will be.
Yeah. Well, and Emily and I always joke about this question, is that the question, you know, should mom work outside the home, isn't really the question that should be asked. the question that really needs to be asked is, how can mom best fulfill her calling to raise her children in the Lord in the unique circumstances that she is in a way that honors her husband, in a way that worships God with her gifts, skills, and abilities for his glory? So it's a longer question and probably a much more difficult question. I think oftentimes we go about this in the wrong direction. We want to basically say yes or no, or 30 hours a week maximum. You know, we really want this easy answer. Mm-hmm. But reality is, and this is what Emily and I talk about all the time on the show, is that there is freedom in Christ in this topic. And there are a lot of different ways that this would play out. As we often also say about things, we can't speak into every situation. We can't know your heart and why someone chooses to work and why someone doesn't work. And we think that you can work for a lot of wrong reasons, but you can also be at home for a lot of wrong reasons. So it can go both directions.
Right.
Emily, I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, no, I echo all of that. As I saw somebody tweet the other day, I echo that echo. And I think it just always goes back to the heart. And when you start on this practical level and try to draw lines, it's like, well, how many hours away from your kids is okay each week? And, you know, it just falls apart really fast. So what we want to do on Risen Motherhood is always go back to our mission as moms, what God is calling all of us to do, encouraging moms to be in the Word, to be involved in their local church, to have people in their lives who can speak into their unique situation, to have moms discipling one another and valuing the role of motherhood and how important it is to pass on the gospel to our children. And we are trusting that God will be working in and through that in families to help moms make wise choices about, yeah, kind of what work may look like for their family in the season of little years.
So we hope that non-answer is helpful for you.
It answers a different question, right? Or asks a different question.
Exactly. Right. It does not answer it for you. That's your job.
Oh, and speaking of choice, we know that it isn't always even a choice, that there are a lot of difficult situations that moms and whole families find themselves in. And so anyways, all that to say, it just is a complex topic that really goes back to the heart and trusting God with each person's unique circumstances.
Okay. So I think that's our final question though. And we finally wrapped up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us on another episode of Ask Us Anything. We will hopefully have another one of these in the future. So store up your questions.
And yeah, if you like what we're doing here, please head over to iTunes and give us a rating and review. Those really, really help other moms find the show. And of course, we are always engaged and listening to you guys over on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all three of those platforms. At this point, you might get any one of the five Risen Motherhood team members. So it may not be Emily or I, but at the same time, we all keep each other very, very updated. We're a tight-knit community, and we so appreciate hearing from all of you guys. And so know that we are still listening, still engaging, and we love hearing about the stuff that you guys want to see on Risen Motherhood and the ways God is growing and changing you.
Thanks for joining us, guys.